Road.
Are we live?
Go for it.
Yes. Hey, everybody. Welcome to another live edition of Spilling Ink, the talk show that brings you behind the book to meet the authors and artists and editors and publicists and just everyone we can find in the publishing industry. I am the Jason Lavelle. You all know me. I'm everyone's favorite. We know that. But tonight we have a great big cast. We have Miss Katie. Oh, Katie Sidas?
Oh, Katie, my goodness.
You've changed your name, Katie. All right. So that's Katie Sidas. We also have J.E. Taylor. How's it going tonight?
It's going great.
Wonderful. And Miss Natasha Dean, how are you?
I'm good. Thank you. Thanks for having us.
Wonderful. And then a returning guest, Susie Vidori. How are you tonight, Susie?
I'm great. Thanks, Jason.
Good. It's great to see you all. So before we get rolling into the show tonight and talking about all sorts of important things like Game of Thrones and Pop-Tarts, I just want to give a quick shout out to our sponsor, Bookbranders. Bookbranders is a company that is made for indie authors. And what they do is they help you through the finishing and publishing process, getting your book edited, getting your website made, getting things formatted, getting things uploaded and set up and ready to go so that you don't have to stress about it. They're a great group of people and pretty reasonably priced. So you can find them at bookbranders.com. So that's it for my wonderful intro tonight. Let's see, who do I want to pick on? So we were talking about Pop-Tarts, and if any of you out there like Pop-Tarts, feel free to comment. But if you like toaster strudels more, I really want to hear from you. My personal favorite is the cream cheese and strawberry toaster strudel.
I love that.
Oh, my God. The only problem is the size of that frosting packet they give you. It's
enough.
Tiny. No, you need two or three of those.
Mm-hmm. That's the only one I've had. That's the only one I like.
No, why would you try something else? Right. Oh, they are so good. So good. So, Katie, what are we talking? All right.
Nope, I'm just gonna say, this is my mom moment today because I have been running around doing kids' birthday parties all day. And it's, well, you guys saw before the show came on, my littlest one just had a complete meltdown. So, yeah, nothing is working as it should. So I'm just going to run with it.
You know, I didn't think that was a complete meltdown. That was like, I need a couple minutes of mommy time. That was okay.
You guys were on mute.
The crying, we got that just from your face.
I wanted to cry, okay?
You know, and today I've seen more than one or two complete meltdowns. Today was our annual Easter event that my wife and I do. Yes, you got it, Anita. Our annual Easter Bunny photo shoot. My wife owns a photography studio here in town, and every year we have bunnies and chicks and 40 to 50 kids that come through, and not all of them love animals, even though their parents really want them to love that animal for a picture. So we had a couple of pretty spectacular meltdowns today, but I don't know, overall it went pretty good. Just a few little tears as the monstrous fuzzy bunny was getting a little too close.
Those are my favorite pictures when you see the kids just
yes. Well, and then we had one where the bunny didn't want to have anything to do with the kid. I mean, it's just a baby bunny. It wants to go hop around and be left alone. But there was this one little boy who was really terrified, and he was maybe 18 months. So it's a funny age anyway. And I swear the bunny looked at him and then jumped right onto him. I'm like, oh no. And the kid's like, ah, it was amazing.
I hope she does.
Oh yeah. We've got pictures. Oh, good stuff. Good stuff. So I think I might finally have this, Katie, where I can actually see comments on here. Maybe. I don't know. You're still kind of the gatekeeper when it comes to comments.
Yeah, it's weird how they have it set up. I mean, I'm not complaining about the platform. I do really enjoy using StreamYard, but it doesn't allow for multiple hosts to control things and to be able to actually see what's going on.
StreamYard, yeah, we're not complaining about you. In fact, if you'd like to extend our beta trial indefinitely, we'll happily plug you any chance we get. We will.
You know what? They offer a great service. They make it easy to get multiple people online on social media, which has been the hard part, because when you go on Facebook and you do a live video, there's always that interaction element. People that are already on Facebook get the notice, they interact, they watch, they make comments, and you can really interact with your audience. Same thing with doing YouTube. Theirs is a little less interactive, even though people can comment in the moment. There's not as many people on the site actively being notified or seeing your stuff. So StreamYard allows for us to be able to do that stream and interact at the same time, which is perfect.
Yeah.
You know, I feel like I'm really yellow down here. Do I seem really yellow? I'm looking at myself compared to Katie, and she's like this nice, cool, clean color, and I'm just like, yellow. I don't like this. I've got to do something about this. Yeah. So, Katie, you were just telling us that you're pretty excited about Game of Thrones. Why are you so excited about that?
Anybody in the audience here not excited about Game of Thrones? I mean, it's been like, this is the culmination of 10 years of them producing almost every single book. Obviously, George R. R. Martin hasn't finished the last two books, but they've continued on where he hasn't. And so we're finally going to get that answer. The end. Who is going to be on the Iron Throne? How can you not be excited?
Well, I'll tell you what. I stopped watching Game of Thrones at the time that Tyrion made a long journey in a very small box. I'm trying not to give spoilers to anyone who hasn't watched the series. So that's when I stopped watching. And there it's twofold. One, I don't have HBO anymore, so I really didn't have a choice. That was the start of it. But two, the amount of intrigue. Yeah, well, I'm messing with my white balance. The amount of intrigue in that show.
Make yourself purple.
It was a. Ooh, yeah.
Ooh, so, that's so, very nice.
There's so much drama and intrigue in it that it actually stressed me out just to watch it.
Oh, wow.
And, I mean, like, I like cool action scenes and fight scenes and all the sex and good stuff that was going on, but it was like, it seemed like every time I watched, it was an hour of Cersei finding a way to torture someone else. And it's like, you know what? I don't give a shit about her. I hate her character so much. I wanted her gone that first season. And I don't really want to watch more of the people that I hate do whatever they want. And so that's kind of why I stopped watching Game of Thrones. It's not that I don't like Game of Thrones, but I thought it was really, really entertaining. But and that goes back to what I was talking about last time I was on, that I want a good show that, you know, has, you know, romance and sex and violence and a good plot. And it has all those. But then I just felt like it got wrapped up too much in the intrigue and it didn't go anywhere. It's like, you know, Danny.
I agree, Jason. I actually watched the first couple of seasons and then I stopped because I would watch them and I'm like on my phone or something because it was a little bit slow. I mean, I love the drama, but I wanted to know there's too many worlds for me. And then it takes like 3 weeks before you get back to this storyline. And then I'm like, who is that again? But what I found was I can actually binge watch it while I'm writing. Caught up because I don't need my full attention on it. It's beautiful. The scenes are beautiful and lots of stuff happens, but I just found it a little bit slow. So it was actually a good one to do. I'm one of those weird people that actually writes while watching television. People have playlists. I'll be like, these are the TV series that I watched. Oh yeah, Jane, you too?
Yeah.
And people are like, how can you do that? I'm like, I do it all the time. I don't know.
My writing chair is right over there in the family room.
There you go. Yeah. You know, I can't do it all the time. I can't edit, but first drafts, sometimes I have the TV on in the background if I'm home alone because, you know, just needs to feel like a noisy full house, I think.
Yeah.
But yeah.
I can't write while watching a show for sure. But like if Heather's watching something that I'm completely not interested in, I can sit on the couch next to her and type, but then she'll put on something like Alien Autopsy or something. I'm like, well, shit, I have to watch this. There's no way I cannot watch this.
No, if I'm in the writing zone, a tornado can hit my house and I wouldn't know it until I was done with the scene.
And there's times when I get so into the scene that I'm writing that I actually just restart the show because I didn't see it. But
yeah,
you know, but I can do it sometimes. And then when I get into it, then I didn't see it. And then I have to, but then I get to watch it again. Mm-hmm. See, there you go. Entertains me a second time.
Well, and you know what I've been waiting for is what I regret about putting down Game of Thrones when I did is that, you know, Danny spent like 2.5 seasons just sitting in Marine for no frickin' reason. I mean, that was ridiculous. It was the most boring crap ever. But now she finally made a move, and it's like, that's what I wanted. That whole season and a half that I wasted on nothing, that's what I wanted. So I'm like, oh, see, I really want to see that now. But you can't just skip ahead because there's so much stuff that's happening. All these interpersonal relationships that change. Yeah. You know, and maybe that's just a sign of really great storytelling. Is
you didn't see the battle it made of the me bastards? Hate.
I didn't see it. I didn't see it. No.
You didn't see Jon Snow's death?
No. No, I didn't. No.
Yeah, are we all hoping that someday people are talking about our series is this way, right? Yeah, that's the dream, isn't it?
Yes.
But like absolutely. That Jason Lavelle series, man, it was a little bit, you know, too much stuff happening, and you'll be like, that's okay.
Yeah. Well, you know, if you can inspire someone to feel that strongly, either good or bad, then I feel like you've kind of done your job, you know? Mm-hmm. You know, that's the whole idea is we're being provocative. We want to provoke people into feeling something. Anything.
One of my favorite things that happened today, I was at a little kid's birthday party, a six-year-old's birthday party. So there's a group of us moms all sitting around, and the topic of Game of Thrones came up, and one of the moms, she's like, I can't believe I'm saying this, but I really hope that the incestuous knight who tossed the kid out of the window in the first season lives. I'm like, yep. Absolutely watch Game of Thrones, because his complete story arc takes you all the way from season one to his redemption, and then we debated about whether he's going to die an honorable death to complete his arc or not. But that right there, that kind of intrigue that makes people stay for, this is 10 years this series has been going on TV. The books
really? That can't be right.
Doesn't seem like that.
That can't be right.
I think it's been 5 years.
No, yeah. It's been way longer.
This is season 8. So
plus the 2-year gaps in production. Yeah, 10 years.
Wow.
I believe you. I just feel that it's wrong because I can't be that old, right?
But if you stuck each season together, though, like back to back, I bet it would only be like 6 years.
There's some 67 hours, I want to say, of screen time.
What? That's only 2 weeks. That's nothing.
That's not like 15 years of...
That's like Lord of the Rings.
Yay, I see a comment from Joe. I'm seeing the comments. Are you guys seeing the comments?
Yeah. Yes.
Sweet.
Oh, you know, and he just mentioned the fountain. I suppose it would be nice if we let our guests kind of introduce themselves and tell us what they do. Susie, yeah. Since you're already right there on the hot spot, tell us who you are, what you do.
Well, thank you for the comment from Joe, who said that his niece loved the fountain. It's lots of fun. I'm a young adult author. I'm from Calgary, Canada. And as Joe Compton just commented, I am the author of the Fountain series, which currently has 2 books in it. It will have a third book early next year, The Fountain and The West Woods. Publishing is a slow industry, unfortunately. I'm with a small publisher, but it just takes time. And so The Fountain series is about 16-year-old Ava. And she travels to New England to find out more about her mom, who died when she was 10. And when she gets there, her reputation's preceded her. The kids aren't very nice. All kinds of crazy things happen to poor Ava, and she gets really upset. She runs out into the woods, and she finds a mysterious fountain. And she makes a wish into the fountain that one of the girls that she just met had never existed, right? See, this could go on Game of Thrones, right? She never existed. And then, you know what happens? She goes back to the boarding school. That's right. And she's not there. She's gone. And absolutely everything in her whole life has changed, even her own family. And she has to find out about the magic of the school, the history of her family. She meets a boy. There's a romance in it. It's a mystery. Yeah. So that's the Fountain series. And book 2 is The West Woods. It is the story of the girl who got wished away. So the number one thing that kids and adults alike that read The Fountain asked was, what is with Courtney? And I actually teach sessions on how to write evil characters because of Courtney, because it was so much fun. Right? But yeah, she was truly awful. She deserved to get wished away. But she has a really good reason she was doing those things. It's a magical reason. And I wrote about that in The West Woods.
See, you now that's an important thing, writing bad or writing villains who are so bad they're good. Like, you really
Yeah. People like her, but I don't know. I was really hoping that the Westwoods would be her sort of redemption book and that people would love her and understand her. And I do believe that readers understand her now, but I think she just kind of lost them. I don't think she's ever going to be liked. And it's just Courtney's.
And they don't necessarily. Yeah. And they don't necessarily have to be liked. I mean, I am on a big true crime kick right now, and I've always loved true crime stuff, but you know, the more I read and listen about famous serial killers or killers, the more you read about their background and some of the absolutely horrific things that have happened in their lives. I mean, things that are blow your mind, like you're just like, okay, you know, I can see why you turned out the way you did. It's obvious. Yeah, your mom and your dad abused you your whole life, and then you watched them burn down in the house as you were murdering your cat, and you know, whatever it is that happened. But in the end, they're still villains. They're still the bad guy, you know, because so many of us go through horrible things in our lives and we overcome them, or we at least don't become psychopaths that murder everyone we see. So that's right. We kill them in books. I will murder your ass in fiction. You got it.
Jason, have you ever read The Gift of Fear?
I haven't. Who's that by?
I have.
That's a great book. It's I think his name is Gavin DeBecker, and he was actually an FBI agent. Really, you know, protected the president, the whole thing. But his book is actually about how people have lost our instinct, or we've lost the trust in our gut. But it's really interesting because in one part of the book, he's talking about when he is talking to, you know, mass murderers, serial killers, the really bad guys of the bad guys. And the bad guy will say something, or the criminal will say something like, well, you don't understand, this happened to me. And he always comes back and goes, me too. Yeah, but this. And for whatever the convict is upping the ante, he can match it because that was the lifestyle he came from. And then he says there's always a point where they're just sort of stunned sitting across from him saying, well, now I'm confused. How is it that we grew up the same way and you're on that side and I'm on this side? And he always, his answer is choices, right? And I think when we talk about characters and stories, and like Susie, what you were saying about, you know, villains and redemption and are they ever liked, it really just comes down to the choices that people make.
Absolutely.
And whether or not we can understand, you know, and I think as writers, like, I don't know that we necessarily want readers to always like our characters, right? Because I feel like, you know, we can walk into a full room, hand out the exact same book to every single person, and everyone's going to read the same book, but nobody's going to read the same story. Because we all bring our filters and our personalities into it, right? Perfect. So I think, you know, Susie, your comment about, you know, they don't like her, but they understand her. I think you've kind of, that's the high point as a writer, right? Not, you know, because we can't control the like, but certainly understanding means you've done a really good job of creating this character, right?
I hope so.
Understand, right? I think so.
Yeah. Thanks.
That's an excellent point. And since you're already talking, go ahead, Natasha, and tell us about your stories.
So hello, I'm Natasha Dean, and I live 3 hours north of Susie. I live in Edmonton, and I write for all of the guys. So I have stories for 5 and 6 year olds all the way up to adults. And then I have, within that, I have different genres. So there's fantasy and suspense and urban fantasy, and then stories for kids who love reading and stories for kids who don't like reading. For the little guys, probably the best one series is the Lark Boss series, which is a set of twins, Lark and Connor, who through the summer are solving different mysteries. And I love this book because Lark is dyslexic, and it's really fun as a writer when you can have a character, so you know, you can see her trying to like spell the words and getting them wrong and crossing them out again, you know, and she sort of gets ahead of herself sometimes where, you know, she'll be talking to Connor, she'll be like, oh, we have to, and then she can't think of the word she's looking for, So, you know, she'll say, we've got a, I can't think of the word, but it's a good word. It starts with like an N or an O and it means this. And then at the end of the book, you find out all the words that she was thinking of. And also it teaches idioms. So every book starts off with a slang saying. So in the first one, it starts off with, my name is Lark Ba and I have ants in my pants. And then she says, not really, because that would be terrible for the ants and not so much fun for me either. But so there's like the idioms that she knows and then the ones that she doesn't. And in the first one, her grandmother is talking to her about upping the ante in this mystery that she's trying to find the key for the librarian. And Lark is very concerned that she needs to find this because if this is what it means to up the ante, then what happens if you up the uncle? And as a kid who came from a different country, and Guyana, like we speak English, but we speak what's called Guyanese Creole. So every 10th word is probably what North Americans would understand as English, but we have different vocabulary. So as a kid growing up, that happened to me all the time when people would like say a word and it's, and I'm interpreting it through the Guyanese filter and it is so not that.
Is Guyana, is that in South America?
Yeah, it is. It is.
Like kind of by Brazil?
The little tip. Yeah, that's exactly. Okay. Okay. That's exactly it. And so as a kid, it was really, it could be really embarrassing because in Guyana, there's a, for so people of my color who are brown, we call them coolie. And in Alberta, there are these valleys that are called coolies. So I'm at my friend's house and their mom is talking, like we're trading stories about growing up. And she mentions that she grew up next to a coolie. And I thought she meant coolie. And I got really excited because this was like 1980s Calgary and the neighborhood we lived in was very not brown. And I got really excited and I was like, oh my gosh, what's their name? And she said, well, Natasha, we don't really name them. And
yeah, so
it was a very awkward conversation.
Alberta is the color of snow.
Guess who never got invited back to that house? So for the little guys, and then my most recent book is In the Key of Niragani, which is all about a Guyanese teen who is trying to convince her parents to stop dreaming for her and let her dream her dreams. And for brown kids, it's kind of this running joke when your parents come here, you know, they tell you you can be anything you want to be, any kind of lawyer, any kind of doctor, any kind of accountant. And Nira just really wants to be a trumpet player. So the story is sort of about her experience and Guyanese culture all wrapped into just kind of how we pursue our dreams while we still honor people. And it's got lots of funny and a really kick butt grandmother who thinks tea solves everything, very much based off of my grandmother's. And it was a top 30 pick for Chapters Indigo and a top 25 for Barnes & Noble and a Junior Library Guild selection. So there's some really good connections happening with it, which is wonderful because there are not a lot of Guyanese-based stories. So I'm very glad that everybody's kind of loving it. So that's me.
And it just came out this week, right, Natasha?
Yes. Yeah, it did. It came out on the 9th.
Oh, wow. Yeah. What is the name of that one again?
In the Key of Niragani.
Niragani. So, okay.
Yeah, and I had the book. But I'm also packing for BC, so you don't want to see what the floor looks like right now.
No, did I impress you with my geographical knowledge?
Yes. Yes.
Do you know how I knew that?
Because you looked it up there once. No,
because while we were in Florida on one of the cold rainy days we were there, we were watching Discovery Channel and there was a gold rush program that took place in Guyana. And so they're talking about it over and over. I was like, this place sounds fascinating. And that, and here you are talking about it. I'm like, that's amazing.
Oh, it's, you know, it's very, if you're someone who loves like, would you not travel tourism, but where you actually, it's more than just sitting on the beach where you actually go and they take you into the rainforest and they take you around.
Like adventure tourism kind of thing.
That's it. Thank you. Adventure or ecotourism. Guyana is a great place to go for that.
That's amazing. That's awesome. I want to, Katie, I'm going to derail us for a minute here. But I've got. Hey, this, I mean, we've been going for a while. How many minutes are we now?
We're at 25 minutes in.
See how well behaved I've been.
Yeah, you should go on vacation more often.
Well, no, this is kind of a PSA for anyone who might be watching, or anyone who does watch this. And I'm going to swear. I apologize in advance. But you mentioned Natasha, the gift of fear, and how we've kind of lost our gut sense. And for a minute, yes, Joe, yes. Well, you know, I have been listening to a lot of, and Katie might laugh because I was just talking to her about the show, but a lot of My Favorite Murder. It is a podcast that is a true crime and comedy podcast, but they talk about a lot of serious stuff on it. And one of their phrases is fuck politeness. And it's out of context. It doesn't make a lot of sense, but basically, especially women have been raised to be polite, mm-hmm. and to do what they're told, or to be respectful, or to do whatever else. And a lot of times when you're hearing all of these stories about all of these women that have been murdered, it's some of it has to do with the way they were raised, where, you know, they saw the creepy guy, but they didn't think it was right to just say, fuck you, and run away. And so they ended up being accosted or killed. And so that's kind of their catchphrase is fuck politeness, you know, trust your gut, follow your gut. You can always apologize later if you're wrong, but yeah. You can't apologize if you're dead, you know, you can't take that back. So see, well, that was my derailment, Katie.
That's
that was
excellent derailment. And I can't see any guy, cause I had that happen. I did do that to someone. And, in the moment they were sort of, it was a cable guy who didn't have his sheets with him. Mm. And I was like, you're not getting in my house until I see your sheets. I can't see your car. Yeah. And I made him go. But the interesting thing was, because he was sort of annoyed, right? Because I'm delaying him and he's got like a whole, but when he came back, he handed it to me and I said, okay, come on in. And he wouldn't. He stood there for a second and then he looked at me and he said, I realized why you did that. And I'm sorry I was such a jerk about it.
That's wonderful.
So I think most people, once they understand the context of why any of us are making the decisions we make,
Yeah, right.
We don't need to. I don't think anyone needs to apologize for.
No, and if I might say, as a man, that if you're the kind of guy that can't get over something like that,
yeah.
you're probably the kind of guy that she was creeped out about. You know, if you can't understand that, then just get the hell out of town, you know?
Yeah, see, I don't think I was really raised to be polite necessarily. I mean, in some ways, but I definitely speak my mind, and it's something I'm trying to teach my own kids because, you know, I have very rarely been in an uncomfortable situation. I talk to lots of people who have been, and as I'm raising my own kids, and my oldest is turning 13 this year, and I'm just figuring out now that I think it is because of the things that they're being taught, make eye contact. Speak to people, don't be a wallflower. And I mean, I'm none of those things. So I think it's served me well, but I really hope that people are recognized, like it wasn't on purpose in my context, but I'm really hoping that next generation coming up has that confidence to be able to, you know, I hope my kids don't say what Jason just said, because, you know, I don't want them using that kind of language, Jason, but, but you know what I mean? Hey, I'm a young adult author. You know, we're kids authors here. We gotta be.
No, no, I hear you. I hear you. But you know, I would. You know, my youngest is 10 now. All my other kids are the next youngest one is 17. So
yeah.
And they've all gotten that same lesson as, you know, you think of yourself first and your safety first. Get out of any situation you have to. It doesn't matter what's happening. And I would much rather them be rude to someone and have to apologize later. That's okay. As long as they're safe. That's all I want. So, all right, Jane, did you just release a book?
Yes. Homecoming.
Tell us about your book release.
It's the second book in my Lucifer's Daughter series.
Lucifer's Daughter?
Yes.
That sounds intense.
I'm the first one. Homecoming was the second, and I'm actually, you know, Fast and Furious on Judgment Day, which is the last one.
Nice. Wow. These sound intense. Are these YA books or are these adult books?
They kind of cross the borders.
The characters younger. She's 16. But it's kind of, I don't know, Katie.
It crosses the borders because your main character is a teenager.
Yes.
But she's dealing with things that are beyond her years. And yeah, that's part of her drama.
Yeah. So I'm having fun with it.
And I get to beta read it, so I'm excited about these. Fun story. We have our little thing that we haven't announced yet either that will tie into some of that, and that makes it even more exciting. Yes. Because I love dealing with not just a series, but being able to share a world and expand on a world. So reading those books has made me super excited.
Yes. And I have to write a critical scene. That's coming up. That will spin into our co-written series.
And, oh, so you guys are co-writing a series?
Yes, we are.
Whoa. That was like a super subtle little announcement there. I expected like some fireworks or something going on.
When I get permission to share, there will be fireworks. Because let me tell you, the covers, oh my God. So pretty.
Yes. Well, the first one was a pre-made that I saw. I'm like, oh, can't even write this.
Jane has a problem with covers.
Yes.
What's your problem with covers?
She sees them and she buys them.
You're a collector.
Yes.
Well, I see so many beautiful covers, and I would do the same thing if I had any money, because all of these covers, I'm like, oh my God, I love you. I want to own you. And then I'm like, oh, you're $350. I can't own you.
Yeah, no, ooh. I'm not paying that amount. But yeah, Fire Curse, the first book in this, was one that I was like, oh, I have to have that. And I like put everything I was writing down to write that story, because it just went whoosh.
Well, covers matter.
Yeah.
Covers matter. They really do. And, you know, if you think otherwise, especially in young adult or new adult or whatever your stories are classified as, kids will not read a dorky cover. They just will not.
They won't. Perfect example for you.
Oh, yeah. Let's see the perfect example.
I like it. Of a good one or a bad one? I guess we're going to have to be the judges.
Well, I think it's a before and after.
It's not a bad one, but it does illustrate, especially with young adult, the difference in the cover expectations. So I'm going to hold these two up. This is the same book, two different covers.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. This is the original cover.
Yeah.
Which I chose because it was beautiful. It was subtle. It was kind of meant to show the coming of age side of the story.
Yeah.
Didn't sell well. As soon as I changed over to a more genre friendly, obviously young adult cover, started selling better.
Yeah.
You know what's funny is that I still like the first one way better.
Me too.
It's so much more artsy and it's simple and beautiful and I love it.
But I think online, I think too, like if you, I don't know if most of your sales are in person or online. I'm thinking probably online, but the second one had such bright colors. And so when you've got a whole page of things that kids are looking for, it'll pop better.
Yeah, that's a badass cover right there.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
I saw that. I got to write that story.
Yeah, it's so cool. So cool. And I am not with my publisher, Katie. I am really not happy with my covers at all. The Cold Room, I like, and I think that's because we actually photographed the original cover and sent them the artwork and said, you need to use this for this book. But as far as Whispers in the Shadows and The Dark of Night, I'm not happy with it. But it's such a process to try to get them to change anything that I'm like, ugh. And so I'm in this weird place where I have a tough time even trying to promote things because I'm like, oh, I don't feel confident in the way this looks. So how do I confidently promote it? Which is a crappy thing to feel. So, my experience with small press after this has been what, a year now, Katie?
Something like that. Yeah.
I feel like, and maybe it's just this publisher. I'm not sure, but I'm not happy with it. I'm not happy with it.
Like you said, you got to be involved in one of them. And I've had some say, technically, according to my contract, I also with small press, technically, according to my contract, I have no control over it. But this book here, The Westwoods, I love this cover, but the first cover that they sent me wasn't going to work. They had the same woods in the back. Oops, I'm going backwards here. They had the same woods in the back, but it was like real woods, real fire, not green fire. And then they had this girl running like this. Mm-hmm. And my kid said she looked constipated. But yeah, it looked like a campy book. Like it didn't look like magic. It didn't look like, and it was just kind of off the mark. And at first they said that they couldn't change it, but I was pretty persistent. And then they actually let me get in touch with the cover artist and I selected the girl. I'm going backwards here, but I selected the girl and things like that. And we worked together on it, but I was really lucky because they didn't have to do that. But they basically said, well, I same thing that Jason's saying, like, I don't know that I would be able to sell that book. Like with that other cover, it looked like a middle grade book and not the young adult and also adult audience that I was getting with the rest of the series. So I was like, it's not going to work.
So
this cover works.
Being a small
I can't hear you, Jane.
Oh, that was some feedback.
Yeah. Being a small publisher, I actually hooked my authors up with the cover artists we use and have them work together. And then we get final approval, but it works better that way because, you know, the cover artist is great and he's really good at you know, getting their ideas out. So.
And that's important. The cover artist doesn't get to read the story 99% of the time.
Right.
So for an author to convey exactly what they want in the cover, what they felt, what they're supposed to be expressing is important. And if you have that disconnect, you run into a situation where the publisher is just going, well, this looks like it'll sell. I'm going to put this on there. And then you have the author going, but that's not my story. I don't know how to do this.
I don't know how to translate what you've given me as an image to my story. Yes. You know, so I feel for you, Jason.
Yeah. Well, and it's tough and it's, you know, I don't necessarily blame the cover artist because they're going based on what the publisher wants as their standard and then what the author tells them. And if things are lost in translation, that's not necessarily their bag, so to speak. But, you know, it is frustrating. And then, yeah, it's weird because being an indie author, we're all trying to get to being an author who's published by somebody other than ourselves. And I think that's a big goal. And I, you know, for maybe not for those of us who have been doing it for a very long time, Jane. But I think that for the majority of indie authors, they'd really like to have a publisher. Only you do kind of give up those freedoms that you enjoyed as an indie author. And I think that, you know, even though I wasn't making millions of dollars as an indie author, I really enjoyed the freedom I had to do whatever I wanted. You know, if I wanted something to change, I changed it and it was going to change in Kindle and that's the end of the story. You know, I didn't have to ask permission or get approval or go through any kind of chain of command. Leah is up here visiting.
I see hurriedness.
Yeah, she only comes up when we're doing the show here.
I just love that you just see the tail. Like a tail.
Yeah. Oh, that's probably dirty.
You're living boa. That might end up in a story, like a real live boa wrapped around. I like it.
But yeah, so having a publisher isn't always all that, you know. And I think that really having a good relationship with a publisher that you want to work with is important. Instead of just signing up for the first person that said, "Yeah, I really like your story, let's do this," which is what I did. and I don't think my publisher is bad. I don't know that we're exactly the right fit. So probably moving forward, I'll look at different publishers and things like that, or just, you know, go it alone. Be the lone wolf, the lone cat.
Contract wise with them, how long are you under contract to be represented by them?
A long time. It's a 5-book contract, 5 books for 7 years, and 3 books are in. So it's kind of, if I am writing outside this genre, then I can do whatever I want. But they have first right of refusal for whatever's in this genre.
In the genre, not in the storyline?
Ouch.
Yes.
Ooh, ouch.
Whatever's within the subgenre of action thriller. You're pulling my headphones out, Kat. That doesn't feel ouch. Good.
That's difficult because that is kind of your primary genre. So what do you do when it comes to writing stories now to kind of circumvent that?
You know, I don't really know what I'm going to do. I'm trying to start just going with the flow of things a little bit more. Thank you, Joe.
Joe's got your back.
I don't know if you're talking to me, Joe, or who. But
I think he's talking to the cat. That.
Oh, yes, Leah. But yeah, so I'm just going to, I don't know, I'm going to kind of do my thing. I've got a couple short stories that I actually think are really cool that I'm working on for some anthologies. And then I am writing a novel that whether or not it'll go to this publisher, I don't know yet. I kind of hope not. But if it does, it is what it is. So, you know, I enjoy writing and we get so wrapped up with numbers sometimes and sales and all this other stuff that we, I think, forget to enjoy it a little bit. But I do want a damn good cover for this next one.
See, and here's the thing that I think that it's kind of the point indie authors want. They don't necessarily want a publisher to take the reins and control everything because indies like that autonomy. They like the ability to make their choices.
They want validation.
What they want is validation, yes, but also representation that gives them that little bit of prestige that we're still lacking being indies, if that makes sense.
Mm.
You know, I know a publicist that could help you out with that, Katie.
Nah. And that does help too, because if you have somebody who can essentially glad hand you into an event, you get recognized a little bit more. You're able to maybe be a guest or a speaker at conventions or at workshops. Whereas if you, as an indie, try and go in yourself, you end up being told, oh, sorry, not this year. Over.
Yeah. And honestly, Katie, I think that's what I want to, that's kind of what I want to do is I want to do conventions either as an author, speaker, or as a podcast. You know, we've got Spilling Ink, which is a really fun show with authors. And I got my new show, The Raven, which I'd really love to bring to some conventions. And that's more of a storytelling one. But,
how awesome would that be?
Yeah, seriously? It would be so fun. You know, I think that it would be really enjoyable for us to interact with people that way, you know, and if they like hearing us speak and you've got a table of books there and a teenager willing to man the iPad, then maybe you sell a couple books too. That'd be good.
I have a teenager who will man the booth for us.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Gladly. Yeah,
I think definitely though. Being introduced by somebody other than yourself is really helpful. I found it really helpful. And like you said, you know, I work with Creative Edge and that's been really great for me, but not only for shows like this, that's how I met you guys. But also for those speaking engagements, you know, we can have discussions about what I want to do. And then, my publicist can actually go, I do a lot of teacher convention this year, but, young writers conferences and things. And it's really difficult for them to research all of these authors, but you know, my publicist calls them 3 years in a row and they're eventually like, okay, fine. And then I go and I, you know, I have a great time and they have a great time and I get invited back and it's awesome. But yeah, definitely if it was me trying to call all those people and set all those things up, I don't think I'd be doing as much speaking and teaching as I'm doing today. So I am really grateful. We have something in Alberta, which is what Natasha and I are members of. It's called the Young Alberta Book Society. And same thing, they set up the events with the schools. And then they set up the corporate sponsorship. We're going on a tour in a couple of weeks that's sponsored by Cenovus, which is an oil and gas company here in Canada and worldwide. And yeah, so it's been awesome to have that set up. And then they invite us and I don't have to contact corporate sponsors to get this done. There's third parties that do it. So it's pretty cool.
Canada also is more author friendly, I think. They like creatives, not even just authors, but just creatives in general. You guys celebrate your artists a little more than I think we do here in the States.
Oh, that's interesting. Often I hear from Canadians, do you get that same thing, Susie? Like, Canadians go, well, you know, in America, I mean, they love their authors. In Canada, not so much. And so that's interesting.
Yeah, I think what it is that there's so much, I mean, for us, the US market or the American market is so huge compared to what we can do here. A lot of Canadians support American authors because they hear about them more. And we get a lot of American content on both TV, radio, publishing, everything. So Canadian content, because it's so small, kind of gets lost. But maybe in terms of a one-on-one and people, you know, liking the idea of supporting the arts, maybe.
Yeah.
But, I don't think people here really think about, well, there are people, that's not really true. There are people that will support a Canadian author specifically, but in general, we're used to taking American content for sure. And so maybe we support authors in general, but not necessarily Canadian authors. Does that make sense?
Yeah. It is kind of an interesting thing. I know certainly within, or at least it used to be within Canadian media, that they tried very hard to kind of blur the lines about where TV shows were set, because they didn't want it to be explicitly Canadian, right? And then Canada also has a really kind of booming industry for Vancouver and Toronto, and I think Southern Alberta too, Jesus, about...
Yeah, I'd say.
Just like little tiny, like mini Hollywoods, because it's cheaper for Hollywood to come up here and film. And we have enough landscape that can pass for like American cities, right? There's like a lot of American based shows that are filmed in Vancouver.
Mm-hmm. Right? And Calgary too. Calgary too. A lot of movies are filmed here. We've got the prairies and the mountains that could easily be, you know, Montana or Colorado.
I mean, certainly Canada. I mean, we have Canada Reads. We've got the Governor General Award. So are you saying then, Kenny, that there's not really kind of a push like nationally for awards and stuff for American authors?
Or public funding.
Or public funding or like sort of a network of community? Because you guys have like the Romance Writers of America and the Mystery Writers and Sisters in Crime.
Did you just say public funding for artists?
Okay, gotcha.
It's so broad, I think, that it's hard for individuals to find access to these things. Specifically in my community, I live in Vegas. I actually live in the suburb Henderson. The Henderson Library System is absolutely wonderful. I love working with them. They are funded by the National Endowments for the Arts to produce programs for the community. And that's how I end up doing a lot of speaking engagements. A lot of classes I teach are through them. However, Vegas, which is right next door, doesn't offer the same thing to the authors in the area. They're a lot more strict on bringing people in. The Henderson Libraries will let you donate books and they will shelve them immediately. The Vegas Library System will not. You have to have a laundry list of requirements met before they'll take your books. So it's really, each place has a different set of rules. So it's harder to find that access depending on where you are. And it ends up giving you that feeling of if you're in the wrong place, there isn't as much support.
Yeah.
Well, and our library here in town has a lot of good kind of reading and writing programs that they sponsor for youth a lot of times. But like this summer, I'm partnering with them to fly in a bunch of authors and have a lot of events right there at the library, including one with Katie that she's flying out for. So, you know, there is support here. It's just, I don't know. It seems like we're a little disconnected.
And there's pockets of it. And that's true in Canada too. I really think that's true in Canada too. You know, you mentioned Southern Alberta, you know, we have a bit of a different dynamic than even Northern Alberta, where Natasha and I are from. But a lot of it is in person, and that's what Joe's comment was that he wrote in about, because he's been up here now. Community in Canada is more hands-on, and within get-togethers that are face-to-face. We are a smaller country, and you know, I'm just as likely to know somebody from the eastern provinces as I am out here, especially within genres, especially within young adult. Yeah. It's kind of tight-knit, so it's great.
But I think I feel like I feel industry, life in general, though, sometimes it's having the strength to support ourselves, because we understand that not everyone, like, that we can't always get those resources, or we can't always get access to those networks and those people. I mean, especially within Alberta, where there's a lot of like rural towns. And so it's not, you know, the bigger centers, you can start your writing groups, you can join writing groups and go to conferences. Whereas if you're in a little, you're in a smaller center, it may not necessarily be as easy to do that. You know, and I think sometimes with this industry, it's you have to really be able to support yourself, right? And like, be okay, even if nobody else is giving you the kudos for what you're doing, to be proud of yourself for what you're doing, right? So, you know, like, sorry that to the world, like, sorry that you won't give me credit for being an author if I'm, you know, because I'm an independent author, but I'm an independent author and this is hard work and I'm doing great. So I'm going to give myself the high five, you know, and it's kind of interesting. I had a friend who said that they thought it was interesting that if you produce your own music as a musician and you're singing on the streets, people really support you. If you are a visual artist and you just rent out a room in a hotel and you're selling your stuff, people will support you. But if you are a writer and you do that, then people say, why can't you be patient? So it's kind of an interesting thing, right? Like that someone else's opinion of our work, someone else's opinion of the choices we make.
That also kind of ties into the very sensitive subject of pirating and mm-hmm. how people feel entitled, really, to be able to devour as much of whatever art they like as possible, whether it be video, whether it be movies, TV, or books. People have this sort of entitlement feeling when it comes to the arts, that they should just be allowed to take in as much as they want. And the book community is very vocal about this and saying, no, we put so much money and time and effort into writing and producing these books. You're literally stealing money out of my pocket when you do this. And so you get that big fight between the two. Neither side's going to listen to the other. And the biggest argument that we hear is, well, why are you feeling like you are entitled to my work?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, it's, you know, I wonder about it, especially with a media platform like Pinterest, because what am I thinking here? So probably like 4 or 5 years ago, it was on an agent blog. She was talking about an author of hers who would post occasionally, right? She would do her posts, and she would take an image from online and she'd throw it up on her blog. And she would give credit, so she'd link back to the website, she'd link back to the artist, all this kind of stuff. And she was under the impression that she was okay in doing it because it was under, she thought it was under the Fair Use Act or the Fair, right? And she wasn't violating copyright. And a photographer whose image she used came at her and said, you did not ask me to use this, you don't have permission, you violated my copyright, I'm gonna sue you now. And she said, well, I'm really sorry. I thought I was okay in doing this. And he said, no, you're not. And she said, I'll take it down. He said, great, but you've devalued my work, so now I'm going to sue you. And he did, and he won. And she said that it almost, not that it bankrupt, but she said it was having to pay the copyright to him was painful and hefty. And so she wouldn't post images at all anymore. And I always think about that one, you know, with Pinterest, the way that they share the images and they're pinning and they're, and we pin and we go, oh yeah, you know, cause I mean, Pinterest is great as a vision board when you're a writer, right? Mm-hmm. And you're like, oh, and they're going to live here and it's going to look like this. Right? But yeah, I always wonder what happens, you know, have once we put something up online, do we just shrug our shoulders and say, well, someone's going to take it, or, you know, do we sort of push for the right to hold on to this thing? And just because it's on my website does not give you the right to turn around and use it on your website without asking me first. And I don't know where that balance is. And I don't know what the answer to that is.
And well, each person's going to have a different answer depending on how they feel about it. There's a lot of authors out here that go, you know what, pirates are going to pirate. I'm not going to worry about it. And they weren't going to buy my book anyway. So it's just exposure, that word we all love. Mm-hmm. And then you have the other side of the coin where people are aggressively going after every single pirate that has got their book because they are stealing money from my pocket. Every download is a download that could have been, you know, a paycheck for me later. And they're, you know, you've got to find the balance. There's got to be some kind of middle ground here that can make at least most people happy.
Because what I think
is exposure is important.
Right, it is. But when you ask somebody to take it down and they don't, there's a problem there.
Yeah, and absolutely. I agree with you there. So there's that middle ground that nobody can find right now of right. What is okay.
Yeah, and I think we're coming full circle a bit. Like if you look at like the kingdoms and things in the past where the king and queen would hire the jester and the musician and whatever, and they would pay that person and then everybody could enjoy it. Mm. And we're kind of moving back towards that with people with Patreons and things like that because it's you know, asking the community or people who can afford to support you and then putting it out to that broader community. So I still don't think, I mean, you're paying for that and then the Patreon people get it, but it's that same kind of idea of being that patron of the arts, right? And so this is a weird point in time where we're trying to sell to individuals instead of getting a government or a this or a that. And we were talking about the different support to recognize our work and then make it available. I don't know.
I totally agree. Author, sign me up.
Yeah, it's like get a salary to be an author and then just put it out there and not have to worry about it. That'd be nice, right?
Oh, right. Whatever you want.
Yeah, whatever.
My wife and I have owned a – boy, we had a weird echo there. My wife and I have owned a photography studio for many years now, and I have to tell you that photographs, just like books, are something that are extremely undervalued and devalued by people. People don't think they're worth shit at all. They don't care. They feel entitled to them. If they see them, they will take them. Even if they're on your ordering website and they're stamped copyright, do not print. We have gone into people's houses for photo shoots that have stolen images off our website and hung them on our walls without even bothering to erase the copyright that we placed on them. And they did that with no shame because they don't put any value on that type of artwork. And it's a shitty thing. And if we find someone stealing our images, we will immediately send a cease and desist and sometimes several. And up until this point, that's always been sufficient. But if it ever got to the point that we needed to sue someone, I don't even know that we would pursue it because it's so expensive to do.
There's the other side of the coin.
Exactly. And if you want to go after everyone who's committing an act of piracy or copyright infringement against you, then hey, that's your right. And if you can afford to spend the time and the oodles of money it's going to cost to do that, then hey, that is your work. Frickin' go to town, take them to the cleaners. But it's not realistic for most of us, I don't think. You know, we're just trying to get by and live our lives and make our art and share it with people. And, you know, if somebody comes along and rips us off, you know, what are our options? We send that cease and desist, but then are we really willing to retain a lawyer and go forward with it? I don't know.
Let me bring up Turkeygate, if you guys remember that one.
Yeah.
Which one? Yeah.
Okay, so about a year ago, Cockygate came about.
Oh, yes!
The key elements there was the font script. She did not pay for, it was either the copyright or something, protection on that. It belonged to the creator, and he could do nothing. He had no money to come after her. So she was in the middle of trying to sue all these people for stealing her cover ideas. And she trademarked the word copy or cocky. But this little guy who created the font that she used on her covers had no recourse. He couldn't do anything to stop her.
Well, one of the problems in these day and age, I mean, this happened with my sister, who's a teacher. One of the kids went online, found the answer key, and used it word for word. And Jill, my sister, said no. And the mother was like, well, it was on the internet. Don't you understand that was plagiarism?
Wow.
Wrong? Well, it was on the internet.
Well, it's a matter of right and wrong. We know what's right and wrong.
Saying that. That was the mother saying that, not the child. The child
was idiotic.
But it's like that kind of mentality out there right now is just like, that doesn't make it yours. Mm-hmm. And that's what people are thinking. So. Yeah.
You know, it's funny, as I've heard lots of slams against the millennials and this generation, and I'm right at that point where I'm right in between Gen X and millennial, but they're calling it the age of entitlement, and I don't necessarily think that's true, but I'll tell you what, I certainly do hear and see a lot of that I deserve this for no reason. Other than I feel like
I want it now.
Yeah.
We're in the age of it's better to say I'm sorry if you're going to say I'm sorry than to ask permission. And people seem to follow that. I'm going to do what I'm going to do. And if I piss somebody off, maybe I'll apologize for it afterwards.
Well, it's Ariana Grande's new song, right? The Seven Rings. The words are, I see it, I want it, I like it, I got it, right? Yeah. Like that's the chorus. It's just like that.
But that's because she's a gazillionaire and she buys it.
Yeah.
She does it. She's not just taking it like these fools. Oh, I do like that song though.
My kids like it too. It's, you know, it's again, I'm assuming she paid for the rights to the song since it's not really her song, right? It's from The Sound of Music.
From the West,
it's the favorite things from The Sound of Music, the words, whatever. You know, she's changed the word.
I knew the melody was from.
Oh, you didn't know it.
Well, I didn't know where it came from though. Yeah. I know the song. I thought it was like a ballet or something, but that makes sense.
Yeah,
I assume as famous as she is, she's basically
done. Oh yeah, I'm sure she's in the clear. I'm sure she's in the clear.
It's always the little ones that try and get away with things. The big ones know better and just put their money where their mouth is. It's the other guys who tend to go, let's see what I can do. Maybe I get away with it.
Well, but didn't Robin Thicke get sued by Marvin Gaye's estate?
Yeah.
He got hammered pretty good, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I remember that, yeah.
Yeah, they're very protective of Marvin Gaye's.
Ariana Grande, Rebecca? Come on.
Well, it's funny how it came up because I was like, Marvin Gaye. No, you know Marvin Gaye. Like, come on, right? But yeah. but he got hammered pretty good.
Now we could extend this conversation really long and talk about how copyright is now not necessarily being changed, but the way it's being used is changed. And we're all being urged to make sure that we've got our copyrights filed appropriately, because it used to be poor man's copyright was enough to go after somebody legally. You may not be able to recoup all of your costs, but you could still go after them legally. Now they are requiring it. The poor man's copyright no longer holds water.
But you can, you know, your copyright date is when you created it. So you can actually file later for copyright. So if you ever required it, then you could file for it. Yeah, so that's, you know, you don't need to file for it necessarily when you've completed the work. But if it ever becomes an issue, then you can file for it. And it's pretty straightforward to file for, because I've done it not for my own work, but in my previous corporate life, I've filed lots of copyright on images and things to get them taken down. But you prove, you know, the dates on your images, and then you file that, and then you can send the cease and desist and whatever else you need to do. But they can be old images as long as you have proof that they're yours.
It's fairly straightforward. It used to cost 50. I think it costs 75 now to copyright your book. And you have to send them also the best copy of your book. So if your book is ebook and print, you have to send them a print copy.
Interesting.
And it takes probably 6 months for you to get the notice back with your copyright number and all that. But once you've sent it in, you can pretty much be assured you're all set and done.
Interesting. I'm still Jason playing around with the color of my face.
To file. it's something that comes up every so often. I actually had a client last week sent me an email as we're prepping to start his book and get him ready to publish. And he asked me, he's like, do I have to copyright my book? Is that a requirement? So I had to explain to him that it's not a requirement to publish, but it's a requirement if you want to legally protect your work. Mm-hmm. So you have to make the decision on if you're going to do that or not. And when you run into pirates, you know, taking your book online, what do you do?
Mm-hmm. Yes. Like, what is he doing?
In the bottom, I think he's so relaxed on location.
I'm just here, man.
You're just attracting us.
I'm just here hanging out at the bottom. Yeah, with Susie.
That's right, Rebecca. You do have to file your copies with the Library of Congress.
Also, along with copyright, you get your LCCN too by sending to the Library of Congress. And that's important if you want your books to be in the library.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So you might as well just get it all done.
Mm-hmm.
More work for us indie authors, right?
Yep.
More fun.
I was gonna say the fun work. Yeah. Okay.
writing as hard as it is the fun part, guys.
It is.
As I sit here, I was up till 2 a.m. last night, beating my head against the computer, trying to get this one scene to work, and it's still not right. So guess what I'll be doing tonight?
Oh no.
I know what I want it to look like. I know what I want to have happen. But as I've gone over it, and I'm on like my 5th revision of just this 3,000 word scene, it still doesn't sound right. So I'm back to square one again.
That's okay. You won't give up.
No, no.
If you have faith, you'll get it.
You might have to shelve it, write another scene, and then go back to it, Katie. I've learned that. In this series that I can jump around if I don't know where I'm going here, but I have another scene in my head, just write it and then go back.
See, the problem is 2 more scenes away from this one is where I literally ran into the wall. And though I know the ending of the story, I have no clue how I'm going to get them there. No. Yep. So I had started back and I was like, let me work on a few scenes I know that needed tweaking.
Oh,
now I'm slowly inching my way towards that roadblock again. And I still have no clue how to get them there.
It'll come to you in the shower. Isn't that what always happens?
Say. Yeah,
always. Forget it.
Or in the car.
Always in the shower. Yeah.
You can't write it down. Anywhere you can't write it down.
Uh-oh. Yeah, boy, is that true.
Plotting again. Now, we'll be talking to the Furies, I think it's next week, right? Is that Drinks with Authors next week? The 19th, right?
Yes.
Yeah, yes. We'll be talking to the Furies next week.
I'll come join you, Rebecca. I need a new home.
That will be an interesting episode.
Yeah.
Speaking of, I think we've come to the end of our session today. I want to thank you guys for hanging out with us. It's been a great conversation.
Thanks so much for having us.
Thanks for having us. This is wonderful.
Yeah, and you guys are welcome back anytime. So anytime you want to come chit-chat with us, just send us a message.
Do you guys see how the color balance changes? If I just go from side to side, it's bizarre. I don't like that. Look at that.
He was behaving so well.
Your own diverse novel.
Look, it's like okay over there. No, bad. No, this has been a fun show. It's been fun to talk to you guys. And it was good to meet you, Natasha. I'm glad that you're on today.
Oh, thank you. Thank you very much. It was really fun meeting everyone and having this chat. And well, Susie, I've met you, but it was really nice to see you again.
Yeah, we've known each other for like an entire week, actually. It was last Saturday that we met. So we've been booking this tour, but we hadn't met in person. And then this week we had 2 events together already.
And then we have a week together in the car.
And then we have a week together in the car. And I'm bringing Pop-Tarts.
Oh, yeah. All right.
We're going to eat them in your car. Not my car.
If you don't have kids, it's usually okay, unless it's me, because I spill them all down the front of myself. Yeah.
I have a travel hoodie, right?
I'll eat it like a window.
Right? Yeah. Oh, the window. Nice.
Oh, it's because my background is white? Oh.
Good.
It's so weird.
It's trying all to right, make guys. You trust.
Yeah. All right, guys. Well, that's the end of our show tonight. We really appreciate you guys coming on, and we appreciate everyone who is on here watching and interacting with us. We love it when you guys comment on the show. Yeah, because that sometimes gives us new stuff to talk about. Or wait, the camera adjusts for the light reflecting off of it. Rebecca is just, she's solving my white balance problem. She's so smart. Yes, I love it. See the comments. That's where it's at. All right, guys. Well, until next week, we'll see you later.
Thanks, guys.
See you, everyone.